if you try sometimes, well, you might find you get what you need. Welcome to Tell Me More Live, the recorded version of our storytelling night at the Push Comedy Theater in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm Deb Markham, your podcast host and the producer of the show. Our event features storytellers sharing their personal stories inspired by one word and a song. For February, the word was Infatuations, and the song was You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones. In this recording, Sandy Carden, a member of the sketch and improv group Absolute Uncertainty, shares a story about how she had to rethink an obsession with romance and how romance did exactly what it always does best.
Okay, so when I was a kid, elementary, middle school, I was obsessed with the idea of romance. Not Disney princess romance. I was too cool for that. I was obsessed with Madonna song romance and Belinda Carlisle. And I would sing these songs with the utmost feeling at the top of my lungs in my house. My parents loved that. So I was just really, really in love with the idea of love. But I really wasn't allowed to hang out with boys or anything in that way because my parents were very sheltering when I was growing up. And so I really wasn't allowed to date until I was halfway through high school. And so when I started dating, I developed a pattern. And that pattern was, apparently I like to save wounded animals. My dad would call them my projects. And what I would do is I would date guys that needed help in some way. In high school, it was the track star who was amazing. He had great grades. He went on to get 3 degrees in 4 years, but had a lot of issues with his family. So the love he didn't get from his family, he got from me, which was really frustrating because when you're 16, 17 years old, you don't want to be someone's sole, like, source of love. It's very, very demanding and a lot of pressure. And so then I, but, you know, I felt needed. So that was important. And I felt like I was really helping him out, which was also apparently very important to me, to help him. And so my parents were pretty okay with him because he got good grades and for the most part was a nice guy. So they never really raised a whole lot of flags, except for this whole issue with the parents. And so I went to college, and the high school guy and I broke up after our junior year. And I ended up dating this guy who was a very tragic and tortured artist. He was beautifully talented. I like to call him a beautiful disaster. If any of you know that song by Kelly Clarkson, really spoke to me. but he was beautiful. He was a beautiful person. But he was very conflicted and very tragic, and he made the most amazing artwork, and it was something that I couldn't do. So I was just really just in awe of him. But he too had a lot of demons, and I was his support system. And so again, I found myself in a situation where I was the source of love for this person, and it just sucked out of me. And so that didn't work out well. And after college, I took a little hiatus from boys for a while. I traveled around. That was nice. That was actually a really, really good idea because you would think I would learn something from that, but I didn't. So immediately after coming home, I ended up dating the broken-hearted single father who was very recently broken up and not quite yet divorced. And he's still one of my very best friends. I should preface by saying that. But he has a lot of problems, or did. And he had the hardest time. Like, he loved me. He loved me. I was so important to him, and we were going to make it. But he couldn't help but put his penis in other people because of the validation that gave him. And it was really, it was off the charts ridiculous. I would find myself driving by his house at night. I'm not that girl. But I would find myself driving past his house at night being like, oh my God. So it was another one of those situations where I was putting all of myself into this relationship to try to fix him, to try to help him, to love him, and it just wasn't working. And through all of this, I had this best friend, and his name was JT. And he was, he's actually really good looking. He's like 6'3". He's got this, you know, brown hair. And he's a really good looking guy. Takes really good care of himself. And you would think that that would be the guy I was interested in, but I wasn't. So he was my best friend, and we were always talking about things with each other. We were always helping each other through each of our relationships. And I felt like we really understood each other. We really knew what the other one was going through, but we were never really single at the same time. So it was never a situation where anything could really happen. Until one night, when I was crying about said single father, and just not understanding why this would happen to me. And out of nowhere, at least to me it seemed, he grabbed me and he just kissed me. I was like, whoa, what did you just do? And he's like, well, you know, I really have felt this way for a while, and I think that, you know, I always get in these bad relationships, and you always get in these bad relationships, and, you know, maybe we should just, you know, see what would happen if we would date. And I was like, no, that's not going to happen. And I really shot him down quite a bit until finally he lived in Richmond, and I lived here. And we would talk over internet, and it would always be that thing where it was like, yeah, let's do this. No, I really don't want to. And he showed up on my doorstep one day, and he's like, you need to give me a chance. And it was very dramatic and romantic. And all of a sudden, I found myself in this feeling of like, ooh, I feel like I'm in a movie now. Like, he has come down. He has traveled 2 hours. He is on my doorstep, and he is declaring that he wants to give us a chance. I was like, oh, wow, maybe. And kind of when he said that, he was really hot. Wow. Okay. So it was one of those things where it's like you romanticize the hell out of it, and it's like, oh, wow, we're like Harry and Sally. We're like, we've been friends all this time, and we help each other out, and now we're going to get married, and we're going to be together forever. It's going to be beautiful, and oh, the stories we're going to tell our grandchildren. And he was feeling the same way. Like, we were both kind of in that place of, wow, when two best friends get together, that means forever. That means it has to end that way. It can't end any other way because that's just not possible. So, you know, the dating process was actually pretty easy. Even though he was in Richmond and I was here, we would get together on the weekends. And he traveled for his job. He traveled a lot. And so he was always down here for his job as well. And so I would see him when he was down here. So it was great. And we were always excited to see each other. And it was great. And every time I went to Richmond, we'd hang out with his friends, and it was great. And it was just really easy because we'd been friends for so long, and we didn't have to worry about each other's skeletons because we knew every single fucking skeleton there was. Every single one. So it's like, oh, wow, this person is accepting me for who I am, and this is amazing. Well, it escalated quickly. And we have been dating for about less than a year, which for me is quick because I'm old-fashioned. I was raised very old-fashioned. So less than a year to get engaged after less than a year of dating is a big deal to me. So we're engaged. It's all exciting. We're moving towards getting married. And so we decided that, you know, we're not going to move in together before we get married because he's in Richmond and I'm here. I have a job, blah, blah, blah. So, and I have a life here, and I just wanted to kind of, you know, finish up my life here before I move there. Which is, by the way, not a great idea because then I didn't have a job to go to or anything, any kind of system set up. So we get married and I move in Richmond, and, for a while it's great. It's great because, you know, he does have a job that makes him travel a lot, so he's out pretty much every week, and I'm by myself during the week, but it's okay because I have a couple of friends in Richmond that I'm hanging out with, and I got involved with a theater company up there doing some stuff with them, and so I wasn't feeling the loss too much, and we talked on the phone every night, and it wasn't that different than when we were dating long distance. I was like, oh, this is fine. This is great. But as we continued to be married for, you know, 1 year, 2 years, it became more difficult because I found that it was really hard for me to continue to be involved in these programs that I wanted to do because they were all on the weekends, and that's the only time I got to see him. And he was not at all interested in supporting me in theater, so it's like I had to kind of choose between the two of them. So it's like, well, you know, it's important to me to make this work. So I'm going to make this work. I was raised in a situation where you don't give up on these things. If things are hard, you just make them work. So that's what I did. But it was really clear that things were just not adding up the way that we thought that they would. I'm a really messy person. Really messy. You can ask Ed. you can ask anyone who's seen my car. I'm very messy, and he is like straight pin neat. So living with him was very difficult, which is something I didn't find out until we got married and moved in together, which was not a good idea. So it ended up being this passive-aggressive war at all times of, like, who was going to do what in the house, and how I was there all the time, so I really should take care of it more because I'm always there. We never did anything on the weekends anymore, and it was just really, really, really upsetting, a really lonely time in my life. Well, then 2010 happened. In 2010, sorry, I'm getting real here. In 2010, a lot happened. The first thing that happened was I lost my job. I'd been working at a daycare, and through a series of scary events, it just wasn't working out. And so I had too many kids in my classroom. I was often over ratio. Nobody knows what that means, but too many kids in the class. And so I ended up losing that job, which really sucked because I loved it. I love those kids. But so then I ended up a job, and I found out very quickly that part of the reason why things weren't de-escalating as much as they were is because at least I was still pulling in a paycheck. So as soon as I wasn't pulling in a paycheck, things got really rough. But then shortly after that, JT's grandfather died. And so this was my opportunity, because if anything happens, that's where I fit in. I help. I fix things. I am supportive. So, you know, I'm supporting his family and all this other stuff, but we're still just not connecting. And that's really where the switch happened. But I didn't realize it at the time. I don't think he did either. So in 1 year, his grandfather died. I lost my job. Then my mother died. And he just could not be there for me. And so it just pulled us farther and farther apart to where when we got pregnant a month later and subsequently lost the baby a month after that, there was nothing there. But it was still a situation where it was like, I am not raised to believe in letting things go. I'm not raised to believe that I can walk away from this. So I had to, I was like, I'm going to put everything I have into it. I'm going to make it work. So I got a job. Again, I came down here because he was working during the week other places. I could come down here and work here. So I started working at EVMS again, which is where I currently work. And, you know, getting to know people again, having friends again that I was used to. And it was really, it was good for a minute. Reconnecting with people that I really enjoyed hanging out with. And I learned about a pusher show from Brad and Alba and Tiffany, and I was like, okay, I will go. I've never been. I thought it was sound like a good time. So on April 13th, 2011, I went to a pusher show at the Funny Bone, and let's clap it up for that. And that is the night that my husband left me. He left a note, a 2-page note. It said, I'm sorry, on the front of it in handwriting, and then in typing, proceeded to tell me in several paragraphs all the things that are wrong with me. The fact that I'm messy, the fact that I had gained probably 10 pounds. Mind you, I was probably 80 pounds lighter than I am right now. 80, people. but it was just, it was horrible, and I actually have not seen him since then. And so, as you can imagine, that was kind of a train hitting you moment. That was a good motion. And so I just kind of dove back into work, and you know, I started doing improv with the Pushers, and they really kind of took me under their wing and were like, hey, we're going to help you through this hard time by helping you laugh through it. And it was really a great time. I became really close with Brad and Alba and Tiffany. And then I met the rest of them, which is just really Sean and Ed, actually. So then I started getting involved in stuff, and I met Ed. Now, Ed, as you all know, I'm sure, is this big, hairy goofball who right there. Big hairy goofball. And Ed is someone who is very straightforward. He does not play games. He is not, he says what he means, and he means what he says. And when he wants something, he goes after it. And so it became very clear very early on in our friendship that he was interested. And I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I called Brad a lot and probably told him more than I needed to tell him about my feelings about this situation. But I was just like, I'm not ready for this. When JT left, I finally got, I was finally getting myself together. I was doing improv. I was having crushes on people. I was like, ooh, I'm going to be single for a while, and I'm going to go out and do stuff and have sex with people. And it's going to be awesome, because that's not me. I'm the serial, I was about to say misogynist, and that's not the word I meant to use. Thank you, monogamist. Malaprop. Anyway, so I'm again that word. So anyway, so I really want to take that time to just fuck around, to be honest. I was really excited. At that time, I was like in the best shape of my life. I'm like, I'm just gonna go and do whatever I feel like. But this guy kept coming and being so sweet and so patient and so nice to me, and I was like, damn it, stop it. And I would even say that to him. I'd be like, damn it, stop it. And he'd asked me out, and I'm like, no, I'm not a no. And then he would, he even said, we were in Richmond one day and for a show, and he's sitting there, and he's got this look in his face, and I'm like, oh my God, he's really doing this again. And I was like, look, so finally, I came up with this very smooth line. I was like, I'm not ready for quality yet. Right now, I'm all about the quantity. I'm not ready for quality. And he kind of nods, and he's like, okay. And so fair enough. So we become friends, and we're just kind of hanging out here and there, and we were at a 4th of July party together, which was a tragic 4th of July party because it rained. And so we end up inside watching this one guy's videos, which were just... I mean, oh, Edward! Yeah, okay. So they were someone's videos. I'm not going to say that. And and it was kind of awkward because I didn't know these people very well. And it felt like one of those things where it's like, hey, guys, now that I've got you trapped in my house during the rain, I'm going to show you a bunch of videos of myself. So Ed and I decided we were going to get out of there. And we went to AJ Gator's, and we sat down, and we had a good conversation. And as we left, he kissed me on the forehead. And I was like, whoa, there, that's too far. But as we talked, we started to get to know each other. I realized more and more, I was like, damn it, this is it. This is the one that I'm supposed to be with. And it became more and more clear because it's so easy. So easy, and in a way that was not like, oh, we're best friends for years and we know each other completely. It was immediate, my soul felt his soul, and we were together. And after several months of what we would call pre-dating, that's a term that Ed termed because I was not ready to date. So we pre-dated for several months until Ed told me we weren't doing that anymore. We got together, and we've been together ever since, and we got married last year, and clap it up for that. And so that is how I got what I wanted, lost what I thought I wanted, and got what I needed, and learned to love and want what I needed.
That was Sandy Carden on how love has a mind of its own and does what it does, despite anything we may plan or want, and how that's not always a bad thing. Thanks, Sandy, for sharing your story. To everyone else, thank you for listening to Tell Me More Live, the recorded version of Tell Me More, a live storytelling event at the Push Comedy Theater in Norfolk, Virginia. If you'd like to join Tell Me More or help out in any way, visit tellmemorelive.org. That's tellmemorelive.org, where you can find a schedule of upcoming shows and listen to more storyteller podcasts. Until next time, remember, a happy ending always depends on where the story ends.